What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night right here on a Tuesday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Glad to have you in here. Full hour today. We go up to Celtics basketball. We've got the Celtics on both 101.3 ESPN and our sister station 960 The Zone. And the coverage starts at 7:30 as the depleted Celtics take on the Oklahoma City Thunder. And it's supposed to be a matchup of Kyrie Irving and Russell Westbrook, two of the most dynamic point guards in the league. It's not going to be that. And we'll keep you posted if we hear anything more in this hour. But bad news for Kyrie. He's going to travel, get a second opinion on his knee. One report says he needs the screws in his knee out. If he did do that procedure, he might not play the rest of the year. If he doesn't, can he play through this ailing knee that just doesn't seem to get any better? Again, we will keep you posted. But Kyrie out tonight as the Celtics host Russell Westbrook, Paul George, and Melo and company from Oklahoma City. That game in Boston, the Celtics only with a dozen games to play or so here in the regular season and not looking good as we head towards the playoffs. Remember, on Friday, we're broadcasting live from Farnham Ale and Lager, 4 till 6. We'll be there as part of our 101.3 ESPN Wintercraft Beer Tour. Max Sugar Shack will be there also. We look forward to hanging out with them. The Taco in a Bag. I've been dreaming about it since we had our last remote with them back in September. It was a lot of fun in September when we hung out with Max Sugar Shack. Now we get food and beer for our Wintercraft Beer Tour, and all dogs are welcome at Farnham Ale and Lager in South Burlington. So you can bring literally the whole family out. So we look forward to seeing you there. Last night was a great night. And the reason why is because, well, a couple of things. I saw my favorite episode of Seinfeld. So I'm scrolling through TV last night. Jess and I are watching TV, watching the CW. And I see that season 7, The Calzone, is on. That is my absolute favorite episode of Seinfeld. I tried to pick out a top 5 to share with you guys, but I just couldn't do it because I love all Seinfelds. Like, when I tell you I love Seinfeld, I love Seinfeld. I can quote, it feels like every episode. I once remember, like, a decade ago, there was the Scene It games and you were supposed to play on teams. I beat like a team of 10 with just myself on just Seinfeld. Like, I was that into it. And while I'm not watching it as much as I used to, I will still make time to watch episodes really whenever they're on. And I wrote my honors thesis in college on Seinfeld. So 802-655-6672. If you have your favorite episode of Seinfeld, I couldn't come up with the top 5. I didn't even bother trying. The only thing I could tell you is that The Calzone is my favorite and that the best Seinfeld episode did not come from seasons 1 through 3. It's because Seinfeld didn't hit its groove until season 4. There were a few really good episodes in season 3. The one where Jerry had the car reservation, that one was great. The one with Keith Hernandez, that was great. But Seinfeld didn't hit its groove until at least season 4. Season 4 through 7 was the sweet spot of Seinfeld. Chances are your favorite episodes came from that point also. When I watched The Calzone yesterday, that is my favorite. And now I'm converting Jess into a Seinfeld fan also, because for a while, it wasn't that she didn't like it. She just hadn't really seen it. Now she's starting to get into it. So now we're watching Seinfeld and we're getting back into it more and more. Shane in Burlington says the Bottle Redemption episode is his favorite episode of Seinfeld. That's a good one. That one, the plot line of that is Kramer and Newman are trying to beat the system. So they rally up all these bottles and cans. They run out of mail truck where Newman works, and they want to drive them all to Michigan because they can get a higher bottle deposit in Michigan. That's a good one. Also a two-parter, so double the fun there. But when I think of the Calzone episode, also, not only is there the part where George needs to get the Calzone for Mr. Steinbrenner because he's working for George Steinbrenner at the Yankees, there's also the plot line of where Kramer wants only clothes that have come out fresh out of the dryer. So when he runs out of quarters and he ends up in the rain, he goes to the place with the calzones for George and asks the guy to cook his shirt for him so he can get it out of the oven.
Ready? Three calzones and one hot shirt and jacket.
Jeez. This is all burned up. Look at this.
What the hell do I know about cooking a shirt, huh?
So what the hell do I know about cooking a shirt? Kramer didn't run out of quarters, actually. He just was, he was out and about and he was caught in the rain, so he wanted his clothes to get dry and reheated. So that's my favorite Seinfeld episode. Happy that I could watch it last night. Happy that it was on. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. Again, I couldn't even give you a top five. I wanted to. Vince says the episode with the Jimmy, and that one, I feel like I'm being quizzed here. That one is the one where George starts referring to himself in the third person because he hangs out with this guy at the gym that they play basketball with who's named Jimmy, and Jimmy refers to himself in the third person. You know, oh, Jimmy's new in town. Jimmy's got some new moves. Jimmy, I'll see you later. And George starts talking about himself in the third person. He goes, George likes spicy chicken. So that's a good one, too. And there's some other plot lines to that one also. But, yeah, Seinfeld, to me, the greatest show ever. And the greatest show ever. I wrote my honors thesis on it. Could watch it all day. Can quote most of it. Vince goes, Kramer goes to the party because of his shoes also. That's also in the Jimmy one. Jeff in Plattsburgh, what about the feats of strength? That was the Festivus episode. That's one of the more I would say that maybe this is a good one. I would not that I plan on doing the first 10 minutes on Seinfeld, but I would say maybe the most mainstream episodes of Seinfeld are Festivus, the feats of strength, the Festivus poll right around Christmas time. That's the new holiday that was created by George's dad. That one is one of the most mainstream, and the Soup Nazi, I would say, is the most mainstream. Everybody knows, even if you don't know Seinfeld, everybody knows the line, no soup for you. That one, I would say Festivus and the Soup Nazi are the two most well-known Seinfeld episodes. And people who aren't Seinfeld fans or have never watched an episode, there's a good chance they've heard the line, no soup for you, or heard of Festivus. All right, it's Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Coming up on the show today, David Price, the key to the Red Sox season. That's in 5 minutes. Rain Supple, CVU grad, Wake Forest pitcher. He joins us at 6:20. The majors going against the minor leagues in legislation. That's interesting. Baker Mayfield doing damage control before the draft. But first, Dan Graziano of ESPN says that the Patriots have the biggest need in the NFL right now. When you look around the NFL and you look at the positions, he says that the Patriots' hole at left tackle, the Patriots' need at left tackle, is the biggest need in the entire NFL. And you know what? I tend to agree with him right now. And I thought I was going to come into this segment and disagree with him. I scoured the league and said, okay, there's got to be a bigger need around football than the Patriots at left tackle. There has to be. And I couldn't find one, because if you look around the league, every team has their quarterback. Quarterback and left tackle, to me, are two arguably the most important positions in the sport. We know quarterback is. But running back isn't a need. Is it the biggest need for teams? Wide receiver is not the biggest need for teams. Pass rusher can be to a degree. But every team in the NFL has a quarterback. A lot of people countered Graziano by saying, what about the Bills at quarterback? All they have is A.J. McCarron. All they have is Nathan Peterman. Teams were kind of, you know, the Browns, and I know they're the Browns, but the Browns were falling all over themselves trying to get A.J. McCarron last year. Teams have wanted A.J. McCarron. A.J. McCarron has appeared in trade rumors, and A.J. McCarron appears to be a serviceable quarterback for the next year for the Bills. So I look at that and say, look, they've got the position covered for the next year. And they're going to draft one. They're going to draft one high. They may even trade up with the Giants to get the number two pick. So I think the Bills right now are okay at quarterback, and I know they're going to end up happy and get what they want at that position because they're going to get one in the draft. The most important player in the NFL is Tom Brady. He is the most important player in the NFL, and he resides in Foxborough. And the most important job in the NFL is protecting Tom Brady. Those five guys up front, those guys have the most important job in the NFL, protecting Tom Brady. If you can't do that, look at what happens. You don't have Jimmy Garoppolo anymore. Before, you had a contingency plan. Oh, if Tom Brady got hurt, we got Jimmy G. You don't have that anymore. Right now, you've got Brian Hoyer and maybe somebody that you draft, you know, round three or later. You don't have a replacement for Tom Brady. If Tom Brady gets hurt And I'm sorry, if he gets hurt, seriously, it's probably career-ending. So the five guys who protect up front for the Patriots have the most important responsibility in all of football. And the guy who is the most important, the most critical in defecting in protecting Tom Brady is the guy who protects his blind side. And that's the left tackle, and the Patriots don't have one. Right now, they don't have one on their roster. It's not just they lost Nate Solder. They don't have Cameron Fleming. They don't have LeAdrian Waddle. And I don't know that you think that they're any good either, but at least they're familiar, and at least they were in the system, and at least Brady has some degree of a relationship and trust factor with them, and they both might be gone too. So I know that the Bills don't have the most ideal quarterback situation, but they've got it okay for the next year, in my mind. So I wanted to disagree with Dan Graziano. I want to sit here and tell you that the Patriots, look, for as good as the Patriots are, it's impossible that they have the biggest hole to fill in the NFL. But they do. Protecting Tom Brady is number one. And right now, they don't have not just Nate Solder. They don't have any left tackles on their roster. If you disagree, 802-655-6672. But I looked at the quarterback needy teams coming into this, you know, in addition to the Bills, coming into this offseason. Denver found their quarterback in Case Keenum. The Jets, they got Josh McCown back, signed Teddy Bridgewater, and now they're up to number three in the draft. Their quarterback situation is not as dire as it was 2 weeks ago. The Vikings got their guy in Kirk Cousins. The Cardinals got their guy in Sam Bradford. Now, I don't love that, but again, for 1 year, stopgap until they can draft someone likely, you know, you would imagine possibly in the first round. I don't love Ryan Tannehill in Miami, but again, for a year, fine. The biggest need in the NFL right now resides on that offensive line at left tackle in New England. 802-655-6672. Lodi and Jericho goes, what about the whole Seahawks offensive line? Look, I'm a Seahawks fan, Lodi, and I thought about that angle too. Number one, the Seahawks literally just signed DJ Fluker, you know, within the last hour. They signed him from the New York Giants, and Giant fans can attest to this, that Fluker might be nothing special to write home about in pass protection, but the Giants' rush game was 20 yards a game better when Fluker played when he didn't, if I read that stat correctly. And trust me, I want to use the offensive line being bad for the Seahawks as an excuse for why their team has done what they did and why they didn't make the playoffs. And I think that is probably true. That coupled with injuries last year, but they have invested in the offensive line. They traded multiple picks away for Dwayne Brown. They gave real money to Luke Jokel last year. They have invested in that line, and now they've reinvested in that line with Fluker. So they have guys there. It's not a need to get guys. They just need to coach them up better, and they have a new offensive line coach. So I think still that protecting Tom Brady is the most important job in the NFL. Right now the Patriots don't have trustworthy people that can do it. But Lodi, thanks for the text on the Town Fair Tire text line. 802-655-6672. David Price pitched today in Grapefruit League action for the Boston Red Sox. Went five innings, gave up two runs. He is absolutely, the more I think about it, the key to this Red Sox season, because I look at the Yankees and I say, okay, who has the edge in various factors? You look at the offense and it's New York. You have to think that. You look at the offense and you have to think that the Yankees are better than the Red Sox on opening day. I look at the bullpen and I say, even though the Red Sox bullpen was good last year, and even though I think it can be really good again this year, it's not Chapman, Patances, Canely, and Robertson. It's not that good. So the bullpen's better. The offense is better. What's the one thing that the Red Sox have a chance to be better at than the Yankees? That's a starting rotation. And I think the Red Sox, if all goes well, and it's all big ifs, has a chance to be significantly better than the Yankees. But it hinges on David Price. Because if you have Chris Sale and David Price pitching at ace level, that gets you two aces, whereas the Yankees may have one when you throw in Severino, but I'm not sure at, you know, 24 years old, he's ready to just be one of the top pitchers in the American League. He's very good. He's very talented. But how does he hold up again? Does he regress at all in year two? I have to wait and see that. As high as I am on Severino, I've got to wait and see that. if Sale and Price are dominant and they're pitching to the tune of 19-7 or 18-6, the Red Sox opportunity to A, make the playoffs and B, contend for the division again and try to win it for the third straight year, it instantly goes way up. And I am no fan of David Price. I do not love his attitude, the attitude that he has shown in the past. And he hasn't even been all that great in Boston when he's been healthy, except, he finished strong second half of year one of his deal. But he hasn't been all that reliable. It hasn't been all that consistent. If he gets consistent, and if he turns into a positive leader in that clubhouse, because, look, he was a leader last year. He was just a negative leader. There's energy givers and there's energy takers, and he was an energy taker. He took away, he detracted from that team, and I have to believe that he had supporters of his negative energy in that clubhouse. If he can be a positive leader this year, the Red Sox opportunity to contend and to succeed instantly goes up. Price is, to me, hands down, the key to the Red Sox in 2018, because if he pitches to his capability, team's in a great spot. If David Price ends up 11-9 with an ERA of 4.5, if he ends up, 12-14 with an ERA of 5, I have no idea what this team is doing, because I don't know if I can count on Drew Pomeranz to A, be healthy, B, ascend from what he did last year, or C, even replicate what he did last year, where he won, 17 games and had a mid-3 ERA? I don't know that I can count on that. I know I can't count on Steven Wright or Eduardo Rodriguez, Brian Johnson, Rick Porcello. I know I can't count on those guys. If I can count on David Price, this team gets much better. If I can't, then your guess is as good as mine, because I don't think that Toronto is as bad as people have them pegged for. If Price goes sideways, you could be looking at a third place finish. If Price pitches great, you could be looking at a third division title in as many years. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. When we come back, speaking of baseball, we'll go from the pro ranks to the college ranks and the local ranks. How about Rain Supple? He's a pitcher at Wake Forest. He's a CVU grad. He's 2-0 this year with 3 saves for the Demon Deacons, and he's going to join us next on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You can always get in on the Town Fair Tire text line, 802-655-6672. Like our buddy Chris, the Mets fan, he goes, "Tell Rain Supple, who we're about to talk to now, thanks for beating up on my friend's son last week at Florida State. His name was Cal Raleigh." Brady, both those kids have a bright future. We talked to Cal Raleigh's dad. Cal Raleigh is a player at Florida State, as Chris the Mets fan said. His dad, Todd, I want to believe, is a Vermont native, and we had him on the show recently as well. So Rain Supple is a pitcher from CVU. He was drafted out of high school from CVU, continued his college career at Florida State. He is now a junior, where he is 2-0 for the ACC Power Demon Deacons. He's got 3 saves on the season. His team is on the field right now with a big game. So we caught up with Rain earlier today. So we started out by simply asking, Rain, how you doing?
Good, how are you doing?
Well, I appreciate you joining us. And let's start with this. As I said, you're 2-0. You've got 3 saves, and you've already got 9 appearances this year. You only had 10 all of last season. So why, what have you done differently to really kind of just get more and more appearances this year?
I think the biggest thing is I've kind of cleaned up my mechanics, so my delivery is a little more repeatable, and I've just noticed I've had a lot more consistency with throwing strikes, which has, been my biggest difficulty in the past. So just moving forward, I'm just trying to, consistently throw strikes, and it's been working out well for me.
Was it more of a physical thing, or was it more of a mental thing? Because I was a college pitcher, and I remember that for me it was always more mental. When I was not throwing strikes, it was because I had a bad inning, a bad batter, and it just snowballed on me, and I couldn't get out of it. It wasn't always physical. What was it for you?
For me, it wasn't really mental. It was more just like an inability to repeat my delivery. And this year, I haven't, you know, had that issue at all. I had a great summer up in Vermont with the Mountaineers, and it just kind of translated to this year. So, you know, I think moving forward, if I just continue to make sure my delivery is, you know, on point and I'm repeating it, then I'll be just fine.
Now, you've had success missing bats in college, too, 20 strikeouts in 13 innings. We know you've got good velocity in the 90s. Where are you sitting right now?
Yeah, that's about right. That's like 90, 92. I've gotten a lot of first pitch strikes on breaking balls, which has been my biggest success, I think. That just kind of, especially coming out of the bullpen, that really throws the hitter off. They're all expecting first pitch fastball. So being able to bang that first breaking ball in there is huge for me.
Now, how much is that something you've had to work at? Because when you throw that hard and you're in high school, usually you can just get by with one pitch, and that's just throwing it past everybody. But when you get to college, it's not that way. So how much has that been a transition for you, developing that breaking ball and getting confidence in it for you to use it?
Yeah, I mean, this is a completely different level. I mean, the hitters are much more disciplined, and, that pitch is huge for me. I also use my changeup a good bit, but, breaking ball has been huge for my success so far this year, and hopefully it'll continue to be my success moving forward.
You have been out of the bullpen, as you mentioned. Again, three saves acting as the closer for a Demon Deacons team that already has 9 wins here as we're just in the early part of the season. What's different? What do you like about coming out of the bullpen?
I think the thing I like about it the most is I can really just lay it all out there and empty the tank for, you know, one or two innings. It's different with a starter. You kind of have to pace yourself through 6 or 7 innings. Whereas I can just go in there and throw as hard as I can and hope for the best.
Rain Supple with us here, CVU graduate and Wake Forest pitcher here on Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Now, you were drafted out of high school, made the decision to go to college. How beneficial has that decision proven to be for you?
I think it was a great decision. I've learned so much just about the game and about myself since I've gotten to college. And, you know, going out of high school, it's just you're very raw. And I think I've just learned a lot about, you know, competing at a high level, which I didn't really get in high school. And I've just been able to, you know, really master my game at this level. And I think that'll really help me moving on in my baseball career.
Do you ever sit back and think about, man, I've come from small towns in Vermont, and here I am playing at Florida State and Clemson and Virginia and some of the most renowned programs in the country, and then in a pretty good program in your own right in Wake Forest. Do you ever just sit back and think, like, man, not a lot of people get to do this?
Well, yeah, it's an extremely great opportunity I've been blessed with, and, you know, I never take it for granted. It's, you know, it's easy to kind of get into the day-to-day grind and kind of take what you're doing for granted, but I've just, you know, tried to appreciate every day, and you never know when your last day of baseball is coming, so just kind of, you know, appreciating every opportunity you get and embracing it.
One of my favorite questions to ask local athletes that are doing big things on the college stage is, what does it mean for you to represent Vermont? Because Vermont is not a state that has a lot of Division I talent across the board, but those that are in it are doing very, very well. What does it mean for you to kind of carry the banner for Vermont nationally?
It gives me tremendous pride. My high school coach still, you know, follows all the games and always, you know, talks to me after the game, so he's clearly still following me and seems very proud of me. So it's just a great feeling to know I'm representing Vermont in a good way. And,
You also mentioned playing for the Vermont Mountaineers of the New England Collegiate Baseball League last summer. What was that experience like for you to get to play high-level college baseball but get to do it back home also?
I loved it. Especially when I would start at home, there would always be great fan support. And it was a very cool feeling to play at a high level in summer ball at home. You know, being able to live at home too was very nice. Can't say enough good things about that program. I love playing up there, and would definitely recommend it for any college baseball players.
Now, are you going to be back next summer? Are those decisions made? Do you know yet where you're going to play summer ball here in 2018?
I'm not positive yet. I've talked with my head coach about it, and he's said I have a spot in the Cape if I want it. So that'd probably be the move for this summer.
Rain Supple with us here on Champlain Valley Game Night. He's a CVU graduate, and he's got three saves. He's 2-0 already, and really, really throwing the ball well here in the early part of 2018. Another one of my favorite questions to ask local athletes that are gone at college: what's the thing when you come home for the summer, when you come home ever on vacation or whatever to school break, what's the first food place that you're going to? Like, what's the thing down south that you're like, I just don't have, I miss this thing about home?
Definitely got to shout out to Paisley Hippo, right by CVU. It's a great little sandwich shop, great lunch spot. Can't say enough good things about it. That's definitely where I'll be going first.
Rain, we appreciate the time, man. Congratulations on all the success. Look forward to continuing to follow you here more in 2018 and following the Deacons as well.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Again, that was our talk earlier today with Rain Supple, CVU grad. His team on the field right now, currently leading Appalachian State 6-3. Rain has not pitched today, so his stats stay the same. 2-0 with three saves. If you want to get in, 802-655-6672. A couple of things to take away from that. And we had Ellie Purier on in the huddle as well. And I think you guys have noticed this. Anytime we have an athlete with a supremely local connection, where they're from Vermont, where they're from Northern New York, there's two questions I like to ask them. What's it like to represent the area, and where do you like to eat? And I do the where do you like to eat question because I know it's going to be different for all of them for the most part. And I think a lot of you like hearing about places in your hometown. It helps, you know, it helps show you that the athletes that once they leave Vermont or they leave Northern New York, you know, they're not just checked out of the area. And I think I like that question because I just think it helps bring everybody back together. And I think that's a good thing. I love asking the question, you know, what does it mean to you to represent this area? And I don't do that to be repetitive. I don't do that because I just don't have anything else to ask. I do that because I think it's amazing just how much pride a lot of these athletes take in being wherever they're from. And it's something that I noticed when I was in Albany. And it's something I asked local athletes there too, because when you talk about an Albany, New York, you talk about a Plattsburgh, New York, or a Lake Placid, a Saranac Lake, you talk about a Burlington, a Colchester, a Rutland, wherever it is in Vermont, you just hear the pride. Like, these are small areas. This isn't Denver. This isn't Houston. This isn't Atlanta. And the athletes recognize, you know what? To make it from an area with not a lot of exposure, to make it from an area where there aren't a ton of pro players, you know, that have opened up the pipeline already, these guys are the trailblazers, and they know that. Ellie Purier knows that there aren't Division I national champions coming out of Montgomery, Vermont. Rain Supple knows that kids from Shelburne, Vermont, don't just throw 92 miles an hour and get drafted out of high school with regularity. They're not pitching in the ACC. People know this. You know, Ben Shungu knows that kids from Burlington, Vermont, and, you know, aren't just playing at UVM. People know this, and they take pride. I have found that they take a lot of pride in representing not only their home state, but specifically also their little town, because one of the best things about high school sports, and one of the things that really does get taken away from high school sports through AAU and through travel teams, is the community feel. You remember what it was like when the gym was packed on a Friday night and the whole town was there to watch you play hoop. You remember the way that the town gravitated to the high school football game on Friday night and what it was like playing under the lights, or what it was like playing on Saturday afternoon. That's why high school sports is so great. In a lot of areas, high school sports is being ruined by travel teams and by prep schools. And look, it's true. It might be the best thing for your kid. We've talked about this. Vermont Academy might be the best thing for your particular kid to go play basketball, but it's not the best thing for the high school feel. The kids that played high school in this area and in Northern New York, they remember what that was like when those communities supported them, and they often love that question because it's a chance for them to show some appreciation back. And I think Amanda Pelkey said it best when we talked to her last week or after winning the gold medal. She said that this gold medal was for everybody. It was for everybody that believed in me, everybody that supported me, and everyone in the state of Vermont who came and watched me play, whether it was in Montpelier, whether it was at UVM. This was for everybody. And those athletes remember that. And that's why I ask every local athlete who comes on that same question: what does it mean for you to represent this small area of northern New York? What does it mean for you to represent this small area of Vermont at Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com? Again, if you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. I also love, as you know, I love self-awareness in athletes, because self-awareness is one of the things that it took me a very long time to have as an athlete. I didn't have the self-awareness that I should have until I was done playing. It's why we joke about, you know, me playing well in the men's league. And yeah, maybe some of the competition is more watered down, but I'm way better now at 28 than I was at 18, because I just know more. The self-awareness is there. I threw the ball 76 miles an hour in high school. I thought I threw 176 miles an hour. I wanted to gas it by everybody when I should have just said, here you go, hit the ball on the ground and let's get you out. That's why I walked the ballpark. I struck out a lot, but I walked everybody. And, you know, I ended up throwing three innings. I had one game as a freshman in high school, and I was on the freshman team where you expect there to be some bugaboos. 9 strikeouts and 7 walks. I think I threw 4 innings and 100 pitches. I had multiple games like that where I just couldn't get out of my own way because I just didn't have the self-awareness. And there's Rain Supple saying, look, I throw 92 miles an hour. In high school, that worked to blow by everybody. Doesn't work like that anymore, man. I can't do that anymore. I have to develop that breaking ball. I have to use that changeup. And I love when athletes, when the light goes on and they say, you know what? I have to do something different now. And I love hearing about the adaptation that athletes make. And I think that growth is fascinating for me to see, because you see it in athletics and we know the need for it in athletics. And then you see the need for it in life. You have to adjust. The things that worked for you at 20 might not work for you at 30. The things that worked for you at 18 don't work for you at 28 that I'm figuring out. Things that you used to be able to get away with, you can't get away with anymore. You have to be able to do certain things in order to get better at your job, at school, in your life. And it's fascinating for me to realize, to see when the light goes on for people. And congratulations to Rain also. A spot in the Cape Cod League. I mean, that he's already been drafted once. A spot in the Cape Cod League pretty much assures you're going to get drafted again. And that would be an unbelievable feat for Rain Supple. So, Champlain Valley Game Night here on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Chris, the Mets fan, awesome job. Great interview, Brady. Cape would be a great place for him. Hungry Hippo is awesome in Hinesburg. Great kid. Wish him all the best. Love the show. Chris, appreciate you listening. When we come back, interesting story. Major League Baseball battling against the minors. We'll get into that, and then we'll tell you Baker Mayfield. A lot of people have a problem with Baker Mayfield and his documentary. I usually have a problem with Baker Mayfield, but it's not about this. That's next, Champlain Valley Game Night.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Final segment, Champlain Valley Game Night here on a Tuesday on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We go up until 7 o'clock. We've got Celtic basketball. They take on the Oklahoma City Thunder tonight. 7:30, the pregame coverage starts. We've got it on both 101.3 ESPN and our sister station, AM 960. The Zone. Take this quick opportunity to remind you about the Champlain Valley auction. It opened up yesterday. It goes until Friday at noon. You can save big on all kinds of big items, 75% or more in some cases. And really, guys, everything that you could want is here. We're talking about restaurants, great place, you know, steak places. We're talking Bluebird Barbecue's on there, one of the best places in Burlington. Golf outings, overnight stays, the Stowe Flake down in Stowe, which I've done that when I won that bid the last time we did the auction. So I recommend that as well. But I mean, the Stowe Country Club is the one I've got my eyes completely peeled to right now. The bid starts at $52, and for that $52, what you get is all the practice balls you want, a golf cart, and then unlimited golfing at the Stowe Country Club. I mean, you talk about making a day of it, and you just go on over to Idle Time Brewery, where we did the show a couple weeks ago, and that would be a great day. Get your buddy, both of you win one. $52 is all it's going to take to get that starting bid in. Unlimited golf, golf cart, and all the practice balls you want. That sounds pretty good for a day in Stowe. So something that has been on my mind, and it is definitely this is a tough answer. Minor league players are getting hosed. Minor league baseball players are getting hosed. When you think about the Vermont Lake Monsters, they are getting hosed. Here is what's happening. Right now, currently, Major League Baseball is trying to put through litigation or trying to put through legislation into law that basically keeps them exempt from having to give minor league players work freedoms that you and I take for granted, like minimum wage. This is what happens currently to minor league baseball players. Minor league baseball players make, in some cases, as little as $1,100 a month. Now, $1,100 a month, in some cases, is not terrible, right? $1,100 a month, you would look at that and say, you know what? You could be doing worse things. But consider this. Minor league baseball players work, in some cases, 12 hours a day. You know, they're in the park at noon. The game ends at 10:30. They ice their arm. They do treatment. They go hit more. They're out of there at midnight. So you're talking about a 12-hour day. And then in some cases, you've got overnight travel. Minor league players aren't getting minimum wage. And minor league players only get paid through the course of the season. So guys that play for the Lake Monsters, you know, and that's a bad example because it's short season. Guys are usually coming from the draft. But if a guy plays in AAA, he gets paid for the 6 months of the season. He doesn't get paid for off season, but yet the major league organization expects him to train, expects him to get better. There's no stipend. There's no salary that goes year-round as long as he's in the organization. So these guys are getting paid for 6 months, and oftentimes then they either don't make money in the offseason or they have other jobs and have to train, and they're going crazy like, you know, other professions are doing too. I get that. Baseball is not the only one that this happens to, but there is some real inadequacies in how minor league players are treated. And I know what a lot of people say. Oh, Brady, what about their signing bonus? Not every player. When I used to work for the Valley Cats, I know for a fact we had the 40th round pick in the draft had $10,000 signing bonus. That's not lasting you that long. So not every player has a signing bonus. And, Brady, the team pays for everything. Not always. Players have to pay dues that goes towards meals and stuff like that, or you get very limited meal money. They're not getting gourmet food all the time. So this is a complex issue because Major League Baseball says, well, look, they come in at 2, the game ends at 10, then they leave. That's 8 hours. And of that time, you know they're sitting in the clubhouse playing video games. You know they're sitting in the clubhouse eating food that the team did pay for on game day. It's 8 hours. They don't deserve anything more than that. They have an 8-hour day. But you expect them to come in at noon, don't you? You expect them to come in and get extra work. You expect them to come in and work with the trainer, and they don't get any overtime. I don't know what the right answer is to this, but I do know this. I do think no matter what, as long as minor league players are in the organization, they deserve to be paid something all year round. There deserves to be some kind of stipend. And I don't know what that number is. Maybe it's $1,000 a month. Maybe it's $500 a month. I don't know, but they deserve something. Okay, 21-year-old who's played in AA deserves, if you expect him to work on his game in the offseason and get better, he deserves to be paid for that because that is his job. I know that. I do believe that they deserve to be paid at least minimum wage, what would weigh out to, you know, $10 an hour, whatever federal minimum wage is. Maybe it's $9 an hour, but whatever that is, they at least deserve that. You know, they deserve to be paid for at the very least an 8-hour workday, and they deserve to at least get minimum wage. And then there's got to be some kind of overtime. I'm not saying that the guy comes in at 6 in the morning just because he deserves to get overtime for all that. But if you're mandating him to come in, hey, work with the trainer, hey, come get extra work, hey, we're going to hit in the cage starting at 11 a.m., they deserve to be compensated for that. They don't even, minor league players don't even get paid for spring training. And that is, so you're talking about, again, you don't get paid until the game start. People that, for the Lake Monsters, a lot of the Lake Monsters team comes into the draft. So the draft happens and they go instantly there and they start making money. But there are players that are 19 years old that have been in the system, that have been at extended spring training and the complex. They don't get any money until the season starts. And it's hard to believe that Major League Baseball is doing this to its minor league players, that the players union has allowed this to happen for so long, because they're the ones that are getting hurt in this. For all the great fortunes that athletes have, minor league players don't have that. Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. We will talk more with Buster Olney about that tomorrow. But it's very, very fascinating. It's hard to believe that Major League Baseball would do that to the minor leagues. And just to pay minimum wage, I think I read, it would cost Major League teams $5.5 million more. Now, that's not chump change, but for a Major League team, that's chump change. Golic and Wingo today were crushing Baker Mayfield. And I usually crush Baker Mayfield. I do not love Baker Mayfield's antics. I would not take Baker Mayfield in the top five. And I think he's falling out of the top five and even into the top, you know, out of the top 10 in some cases right now. And that's what, I'm not saying I would never take Baker Mayfield, but I think if you take him high up, you're taking a risk. I don't like that he's got, there's a video out there of Baker Mayfield, you know, running from the cops. That doesn't sit well with me. For CEO of the franchise, that doesn't sit well with me. And I excuse mistakes when people are younger. Police-related things of which you're at fault, that generally I don't excuse. And especially a quarterback where, yes, there is a double standard. But Baker Mayfield's releasing a documentary about, you know, it's called Behind Baker, where basically it's him against the haters. And he released a trailer the other day, and Golic and Wingo, not too thrilled with Baker Mayfield's antics. Here's what Golic had to say about it this morning.
I don't understand, even though this is kind of what, again, Mike, your generation does, and I don't have a problem with that. I accept that. But even with that, though, it doesn't mean that you just do it because it's done. I'm sure he did, or I would hope people around him said, okay, what is the upside? What is the downside? And to me, if there's any downside at all, why do it?
And then Jeff Saturday, former all-pro offensive lineman, he was even tougher.
This is not a get-off-my-lawn rant. This is, hey, humility sells in a locker room. When you're going in with guys who are 34 years old and have three kids and are supporting their family based on what they do for a living, I get the entertainment side. But you better have done something to be able to entertain me.
I totally disagree. Totally disagree with these guys. And look, I have been hard on Baker Mayfield throughout the whole draft process. I just was hard on him. I don't like his antics. I don't like the sideshow that Baker Mayfield brings to the table. This bothers me not at all. Okay, this is for damage control. I hope that Golic, Wingo, Saturday, I hope they realize this. The NFL executives, they have their mind made up. This documentary is not going to change it. They heard him talk in the combine. They saw him throw at his pro day. They saw him play. They've got the film. They've got their decision made. If they're going to or not going to take Baker Mayfield, it's not going to be because of this documentary. Okay? This is damage control for people like me, for us to get an inside look at Baker Mayfield so we could see how hard he works and the odds that he overcomes and the people that have talked bad about him like me. This is to appeal to the fan who doesn't want their team to take him so they can say, you know what, Baker's not such a bad guy. This is damage control 101. I don't have a problem with this video, with this documentary series. In fact, I think it'll be interesting. What the problem is that he knows the perception of him that he has to go and have this documentary series made because he has to try to change our opinions. He's trying to control the narrative. The fact that he has to do that, that's the problem. Celtic basketball is coming up next. They're taking on the Thunder. 7:30, we'll have the coverage for you. We'll be back again tomorrow with the Huddle and Champlain Valley Game Night. We'll talk with AD of Vermont, Jeff Shulman, and Buster Olney. All that tomorrow on 101.3 ESPN.